Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
I don't care if you're a budding Da Vinci or a bungling beginner. There are some secrets to making good drawings. So grab a piece of paper and a pencil and get ready to have some fun as we explore some of the secrets of the master artists when your voice of the earth returns here on the Wildside News. I've been pleasantly surprised to see that some of the most popular segments on the Wildside News are those that help people learn how to draw and do field studies. I've already done three so far and have links to each of them on today's show page. I've introduced you to journaling and the thumbnail sketch. We've walked our way through field journaling and given you an introduction to drawing plants. I guarantee you, if you've put in a little time on those lessons, you've made some real progress. And no matter if you've taken the earlier classes or not, I'm about to give you five secrets to making better nature drawings. As usual, here's how this works. Because the show is streaming on the internet, you can easily pause any segment from your player. So what that does is let you listen to a new technique and practice it. And you can always go back and listen again. And when you're ready, just hit the play button and continue. It's best if you have some paper and a pencil or a pen or whatever you like to work with. I'm kind of going on here so that those of you who don't have something available can get it. So let's have you get some supplies if you don't have them now. Okay, to best follow along, here's what you need to do. You'll need to click from the show page and go to the instruction page. Look on today's show page segment towards the bottom. Click where it says to, and then get ready. I'll play a little music here while we get started. Okay, let's get started. You should be on the special art page which says Five Secrets to Better Nature Drawing. You notice that it has writing on the left-hand side and then images on the right-hand side. We're going to go through these one at a time. And as I said, I recommend that you follow through. You can always pause the show as we go along and practice a little bit, and then just hit the play button again to continue. And you can always drag the little cursor back a little bit if you want to repeat something. Or just listen to the whole thing, or even print out the page. There's a lot of ways to approach this. Okay, are you ready? Here's secret one. And quite honestly, this isn't exactly a secret, because this is one of the most important things that I stress all the time. Nature, all living things, are composed entirely of beautiful curves. So what I'd like you to do is look at the images there in segment A. And you'll notice, for example, the two little leaves, the green one and the red one. The green in this particular case represents a drawing that utilizes beautiful curves. The red indicates how a lot of people make sort of sketch things in. And it's okay. It's not that it's wrong to do it that way, and some people enjoy that. And if done actually right, it can have a really fresh and fun look. However, if you're trying to render properly the living earth, then you must learn to do and render beautiful curves, as you'd find in A. So some of you may wish to pause at this point and practice A. B is another example. This could be, for example, a blade of grass. And you'll notice that the green is composed of beautiful, long, elegant curves. Whereas the red, again, has more what an instructor used to call sketchy baloney lines. And that's a good term, actually. And it works, but if you're trying to render properly, you need to, again, render with the beautiful curves. I use as an example of why this is important, C. I've drawn an eyeball there. And we all know that the eyeball is extremely sensitive to virtually any variation. And strangely enough, that's sort of how it works with our eyes when we look at art. The eye will go to the thing that's wrong. We're going to talk about that even more in Secret 2. So therefore, if you're drawing an eye, you really want to create beautiful, smooth curves, because otherwise it's irritating. Literally to look at an eye with irregularities is very off-putting. So in D, in segment A there, what I've done is just showing you some of the ways that you could just experiment with drawing long curves. When you're not doing something, or if you're busy actually working on your art, then just take and create long, elegant curves that are beautiful. You don't want to make them too awkward. You don't want them to change radically. You want them to be smooth. And then just to really make the point that in nature, all living things are composed of curves, and I also say there are no straight lines in a living world, I've drawn and provided two perfectly straight lines to show you how awkward they feel in the natural world. They just don't fit. So stay away from any straight lines when you're rendering the living world. You may wish to pause at this time and practice, or we continue. Secret 2. Create smooth and even shading. Here's a really important secret. The eye goes to the thing that's wrong, and there's a good reason for that. And that is that if the eye wasn't attracted to the thing that's wrong, probably none of us would be listening to this show right now. When we're living in the world, we can have millions of inputs at any particular second, and everything is okay, but let one little tiny thing go wrong, and we reflex and notice that. The same is true in art. Why is that important? When you do shading, and most people like to add some sort of color or shading, many, many, many people, as they're doing the shading, put it in kind of a random, you see a lot of lines and irregularities in the shading. And here's the problem with that, and that is that the eye is trying to figure out, is that an important detail? Is there a white area there? Is that supposed to be telling me something, or is it not? And the brain becomes obsessed with trying to figure out what all that stuff is, as opposed to reacting to the beautiful form and the beautiful fill that you do when you create a perfectly even shading. Now, the even shading is extremely easy to do. What it primarily means is that you do not change the pressure of the pencil that you're using to do the shading with. Just practice that. Just take the pencil and be sure that you keep an even pressure. And you'll find that the pencil can even stay in one place, and it really isn't getting any darker. But as soon as you put more pressure on it, you're going to find that it creates a darker line. Or if you have less pressure, it's not going to be as dark. So the secret to even shading is to use an even pressure and just color in as carefully and evenly as possible. And what you end up with is beautiful forms with beautiful texture. And therefore you can see the art as opposed to the irregularities. So you may want to just practice that. You may want to just pause here again and try shading. This is something that is really easy to do, but it may take some practice. Some people may find it hard at first, but at some point you'll go, oh, I get it. It's like with anything in art, you simply have to practice to master the techniques. Now let's move on to Secret 3, creating illusions of depth. I'm going to read what is here. Light curves around objects. What that means is that when light actually hits something, by the nature of light and objects in space, the light curves. And what that does is it actually creates a little area of disturbance in the air around the object. You'll probably never notice it in reality. However, when it comes to drawing, it serves a very useful purpose. When we look at example A, if you were to try to identify which one of those crossing lines was in the front, it would be anyone's guess. You really couldn't tell. But when you look at example B, you'll notice that, for example, the line that is totally unbroken appears to be in front. The line that passes behind that with the little gaps moves right behind it and that's just plain the way it works. So you don't have to be obsessive about this, but try to be at least conscious of it, that if you're trying to indicate depth with different objects overlapping one another, leave a little gap, a little area of white between the forward object and the object behind it. You can just draw some lines. Therefore, it's actually easiest if you draw the closest line first and then draw the next line in, leaving the gap, and keep on going backwards that way. It's really quite exciting to see the effectiveness of that technique or that secret. Again, you may wish to pause at this point and practice. So now we continue. This is secret number 4, changing values. To accentuate the varying depth of objects, always vary their values. Let's take a look at example A. What I've done here is I've drawn actually A and B. I've drawn essentially the same images, and in example A, in terms of the leaves, I've created the same value. That has to do with its darkness or lightness on all of the leaves. And you can see that if you had to try to tell someone which leaves are in front and which leaves are behind, you really couldn't do so. But here is the secret. And that is when you're trying to create this illusion of depth with objects in particular that cross over each other, change the values. Always change the values. And don't even worry too much if what you're looking at works that way. It doesn't really matter. Just change the values. For example, in B, as we look to the leaves to the right there, you'll notice that some of the leaves, which I happen to have put in very dark, tend to be way in the distance. And then the other leaves are on top of the distant leaves. And it's very, very obvious. It's primarily the same drawing that I did in A. I just varied the values. And that's a critical element of trying to move objects in space relative to one another. And it also helps to identify and clarify an object in space, because as its value is different than another object, it stands out and alone. Here's another aspect to that. This is like sub-secret 4A. And that is that when values become the same, that is, if it's very dark on top of very dark or very light on top of very light, they flatten. They just plain flatten. So dark on dark flattens. Light on light flattens. Therefore, if you have great contrast, it really creates a large distancing between the objects. And what's fun about that is the fact that you can, therefore, tend to actually move the objects as you're creating them in space by varying those values. If you wish one part of an element of your drawing to close in on an object that perhaps is behind it, make the values similar. And if they end up being the same, they'll literally melt into each other. It's a very interesting process, so you have to do a little bit of thinking ahead in order to accomplish this. This is one that you can have a lot of fun, particularly if you like to do sketches and shading with a pen and ink or pencil and colored pencil and things, because it works so effectively. You'll find that your drawings really take on a life when you utilize that technique. Now for our final secret, and this is a rather interesting one, and it's subtle, but very, very important. And that is the process. It's a technique of intermixing colors. Many artists who are starting out, when they're wanting to use color, they may have a 24 color, colored pencil set or something, or they may be working with watercolors, or it could be with paints out of a tube. And what they do is they take those colors, let's say it's a colored pencil, which in this case, E, that's exactly what I used. And I chose three colors, a kind of a bluish green for the leaves, a yellow for the petals, and a magenta for the center of the flower. What a lot of artists do is they just take those and they use those colors and they create their images. The trouble with that is the fact that in many cases, those colors will appear scandalously inappropriate next to each other, and nature never does that. You never look at a flower and say, oh my gosh, that flower doesn't go with those leaves. They are always similarly enough related in color dynamics so that they get along. They rest with each other. And of course, that's because literally they're related genetically. And that's the important key. When you take colors straight out of a colored pencil box or paints or whatever, put them on the canvas, they may have no real relationship with one another. So what you need to do, just like you would, for example, in looking at a family and saying, gosh, they all kind of look alike, is intermix, in essence, the color genes. That's what I've done in the flower and leaves in example B. I colored it exactly the same as A to start out with. But then, for example, I took the yellow of the petals and I colored over the leaves with the yellow and intermixed that. Now we have a little bit of yellow with the green, and there now the genetic colors are mixing. As well, I took the magenta and did the same thing. I also very lightly mixed in the colored in the magenta over the green, very, very lightly. And then I also took the green and went over the yellow leaves, petals, and as well the center dot of the flower. And I took the magenta, I intermixed all the colors. Now, if you're working with watercolors, that's really very easy to do. You just take and you make sure to try to intermix just even the tiniest little bit of one color with the next. And what will happen is the fact that they will then be genetically related, and they tend to tone them together. And in that process, you actually accomplish two really powerful things. One is the fact that, therefore, in that particular plant or flower, there are no scandalous colors. They actually are related to each other, and they sort of rest. It also accomplishes this, and that is that as you mix, for example, the green and the magenta in with the yellow, it starts to create a vibrancy, more life, more vitality of that color. It brings it to life. That's what vibrancy is. And it's caused by multiple colors creating the illusion of a single color. And the other thing is that when you do that, then you make all of the colors rest with one another. That's how nature works. So if you wish to create drawings and sketches and watercolors and paintings that really reflect the way that nature is, these are five secrets that just plain work. I'll review very quickly. One, everything in nature is composed of a beautiful curve. There are no straight lines in nature. If you're lost on a mountain or on a hillside and you're truly lost and you're trying to figure out how to get back to civilization, you stand up and you scan, and what you're looking for is a straight line, because that straight line will represent a house, a telephone pole, a fence, something human-made. Secret two, create smooth and even shading, because the eye goes to the thing that's wrong. Secret three, creating illusions of depth. Light curves around objects and therefore distorts the air around that object. Therefore, leave very slight clear or white areas around an object in front, and it magically determines and helps the viewer understand the relationship of the objects. Secret number four, change the values. To accentuate the varying depths of objects, always vary their values. And then secret five, intermixing colors. In nature, there are no scandalous colors. So the secret is, always intermix the colors that go into making up a particular plant or flower. This would be the leaves, the petals, whatever it may be, because then that flower will have a genetic color relationship and appear much more natural. I encourage you all to participate in my ongoing art series. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be ramping up the art side of the Wild Side News in the weeks and months ahead here. I'm excited about that. And if you haven't had a chance to go through the three previous art lessons, this is a good time to do it, or at your convenience. So now, as summer starts ramping down, it's best to make the most of what's left. So I want each of you to take a long walk into a natural area soon. This weekend, for example, head on out to a favorite overlook and just listen. And take the time to let the magic of the mystery penetrate. And then, we'll see what's up next week. Until then, this is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios. Until next Thursday or any time on the archives, when your voice of the earth returns here on the Wild Side News.